Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
This is a song I've been singing for a long time. It's like an old friend. But you know, I think it's only recently that I discovered what it's really about. You've got to give a little, take a little, and let your poor heart break a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love. You've got to laugh a little, cry. The glory.
Terry's on vacation. First, I want to thank our loyal listeners from the U.S., the U.K., Hawaii, all over the place. I don't exactly have the list of states near me, but to all of you, I say thank you. That song I just played is called The Glory of Love by Bette Midler. She recorded it 30 years ago for the movie Beaches. And I should know about 30 years ago because tomorrow I turn 30. So, I'm going to bring in my lovely co-host, Mark Anthony Riel, to chime in. And then I think we might have our guest. Our guest this week is named Darlene King. I almost say Darlene Love. Not Darlene Love. Darlene King. But first, let's say hi to Mark. Hello, Mark. Are you there? Hello? Mark, are you there? He's on the switchboard, but I don't know what happened to him. All right. Let's see. This is Darlene King, is this you?
Yes, I am here.
Hello, Darlene. I don't know what happened to my co-host, Mark, but how are you today?
Oh, I'm wonderful. Thank you. I want to say first, thank you so much for inviting me, and I want you to please tell Terry thank you for having me on her show the first time, because from being on her show, I met so many wonderful people, and that's how I end up doing my gospel on radio show. So Terry was the beginning of launching a whole bunch of wonderful things happening for me, and I thank her so much.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to have you on. I never met you before, but I'm glad to have you on. But just a minute, just 1 minute, please, Darlene. I think this is my co-host, Mark, right here. Hold on.
Wonderful.
Can you hear me?
Hello, Mark.
Are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hello, Mark. This is, say hi to our guest, Darlene.
Hi, Darlene. How are you?
Hi, Mark. Nice to talk to you again. I'm well.
I know you are. you're on fire for Christ. I know you are.
Praise God.
I was trying to get a hold of you. That's the reason I was off for a second, because we couldn't get you, but now you're here, so everything's fine.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your note. I apologize. It was going crazy here for a second, but I'm good.
Okay.
All right, Darlene. So let's, for the viewers who don't know your story, please tell us your story. I guess the topic of this week's show is, my pastor gave me HIV. How did that happen? How did your pastor give you HIV?
We kind of have to go back a little bit in the story. My husband also became our pastor. But my husband and I grew up together, so we knew each other since we were 12 years old. And we started dating again at our 10-year high school reunion. We had been to middle school and high school together. So when we started dating at the 10-year high school reunion, we were dating, you know, for a couple of years, but it found out that he was cheating, like just repeatedly cheating. And so we ended up breaking up. And when we broke up, I said to him, I can't be with you with all this cheating. I said, you're going to get HIV cheating with all these people. And we believe that was the time that we did end up getting HIV. And then I ended up at that time I was working, and where I worked at Sunoco, they always had blood drives. They would have blood drives like every quarter. And my blood type is O negative, which is a universal blood type. So every time the Red Cross would come, they would say, you make sure you come back next quarter because we always need O negative. So every time they came, I come running down there with my special blood that they wanted so badly. And this particular year, the Red Cross made sure they let me know that they no longer was desired for me to come to their blood drive. I got a letter from the Red Cross in January of 91 saying the blood I donated had tested positive. Of course, I'm in total denial. And at that point, you know, we weren't married because we weren't even together because we had broke up. And then when I contacted him, that became really the beginning of just this big drawn out lie and deception. Because at the moment that I told him that when I got the letter from the Red Cross, he knew he was already positive. He knew that several people he had already infected that were positive. But he chose at that moment to say, doesn't matter, I love you, I've always loved you, love, 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 love. And he laid that on for months. lasted months trying to convince me to marry him. And after months, we did end up getting married. And so at that point, he was not a minister, but he later became a minister. And but in between the point of us getting married, even before he became a minister, he was studying to become a minister and had another baby by his children's mother, got pregnant again. And I got married on maybe in the hopeless romantic, got married on Valentine's Day. And a year to the day, on Valentine's Day, 1 year later, she delivered his baby, his son. And so that was the beginning of just more lies, more deceptions. And then the baby was born. Of course, now we have another baby. He's ours. He's here. He had absolutely nothing to do with how he came into this world. And that was one point. And then now he becomes a minister. And while he's a minister, we end up breaking up again. Because I left and came back so many times. I apologize. I literally lost count of all the times that I left and came back. But this particular time that I left, now our youngest son, my Valentine's baby, is now probably about 5 years old, and he's on this peewee basketball team. And at this point, my husband is a minister now at our church. And when he's on this basketball team, there's a little boy who he played with that used to spend the weekends at our house because they always had games, and my husband worked the night shift, so I would have the kids, all the kids on the weekend, and be running back and forth to these little basketball games, practices and things. So this little boy would always spend the weekend with us. And this particular weekend after church on Sunday, we take the little boy home like we always do. But it was just something. He's standing at the car with his mom. We're in the car. She's outside of the car. And she's at his window. And they're talking. And I just knew. I just knew he was sleeping with the woman. But of course, all the kids didn't call him anything. So we had five children. I had two. He already had two. And then the latest son named five. All the kids are in the car, and I'm just fuming inside. So I wait till I get home, and when I get home, I say, I cannot believe you have me babysitting this boy while you're sleeping with his mother. He denied it. The next day, the little boy's mother is on my phone. I'm sorry you had to find out this way, but, you know, he is leaving you, and we're going to be together. I said, sweetie, you can have him. I said, but he didn't tell you that he was HIV positive. And of course, he hadn't told you because he wouldn't tell him. He just lied about it so much. And she went silent on the phone. She was silent. I said, she was silent. Said he did not. And then she called me back again. And she said, he said that you are lying and he doesn't have HIV and you're lying. And I said, listen, I said, if you want to be with him, you can be with him. I said, but in 6 months, you better make sure you get yourself ready. I said, you're going to find out which one of us. And that to me was what that was like. It just blew up into this big thing at church. And we ended up having, that's around the time that we ended up having to leave our church. And I left again, and I said, I'm leaving. I said, but not only am I leaving, I'm moving. I said, I'm going to another state. I've always wanted to move to Delaware. I said, I'm leaving. I'm moving to Delaware. I said, I'm done. And I did move to Delaware. Unfortunately, I allowed him to convince me to move to Delaware with me. So we ended up moving to Delaware. Supposedly, this was going to be a fresh start, get away from all the things that had happened in Philly. We get to Delaware, and everything is so wonderful when we first get to Delaware. Starts a church in Delaware. Everybody's doing wonderful. The kids, and you start a bunch of youth programs also. That's one of the things that he always did, and actually did kind of well, which is so sad because he really could have been such a blessing to kids in the football and basketball. And he always started leagues wherever he was. He had wonderful programs after school for the kids, and I used to do all the after school programs for the girls. So we had like a lot of children that were at our church, and of course their parents. And then only after everything was going so wonderful, he began to start sleeping with the women there. And I was just done. I was really done, finally done. And then that's when the whole thing blew up. And that's when I found out he was not only infecting women that were going to our church, but had been, and I found a lot of this out after the relationship was over, that he had all these different people who appear up in Philly, Delaware, and North Carolina, and New York, and Garland. These were all the places that he was going to, just doing so many things that was just unbelievable. I just couldn't believe it. I knew he was a cheater, but to that extent, I really did not know the extent until I left for good final time in 2003 and just started finding out so much stuff from different people calling and talking. And it was sad because I always said to myself, it could have been such, for me anyway, I guess I'm always looking like, how can I take whatever is negative and turn it into a positive to help people? And I just really felt like we could really start programs and ministries to help people that are living with HIV, which is some of the things that I do now, volunteer for several ABC here in Philly. But I just felt like together we could have really done something to help the HIV community in Delaware and in Philadelphia. But he never saw that. And at this point where I am today, I just feel like it wasn't meant for him to see it. I guess I could see it because God was leading me to do that. It wasn't a plan that was in his future or something for him to do. And it has just been crazy. So let me just back up a little bit. So the title of the book came because of all these people that are being infected by her, meaning me, her pastor. So the title of the book is HIV Infected by Her Cheating Pastor Husband, a Wife's Courageous True Story of Betrayal, Forgiveness. And the title came about because when I look back at all that was happening, to me, it was like all these people that are infected by her husband, and they'll never know. I'll never find these people. I'll never know who these people are. The only thing that I could do at that moment was pray that people could find these people, that the story would maybe click something in their mind or in their head or whatever their situation is, and that they might read it and, if it sounds familiar, get themselves tested. And prayerfully, I believe today medication is much, much better than it was in the 90s. I thought that was possible. In the 80s and the 90s, but you know how many people are dying in the 80s. That this book was fine. So when I say HIV is affected by her cheating pastor husband, I'm the her in the story. And all these people whose names will never know have been affected by her cheating pastor husband. And that's what the title means. But I will.
All right.
Today. Oh, I'm sorry. I know. I could go on forever, right?
Well, Darlene, I want to apologize to our listeners because I got so invested in your story that I had to tell them that they could call in. So please forgive me, listeners. Please forgive me. And if you want to call in and ask Darlene a question, you can call 347-945-6003 and press the 1 key. So I apologize to our listeners. And Darlene, I didn't want to be rude, and I was letting you ramp. I was letting you talk, and wouldn't be just stop talking. So, yeah.
I can tell you now, while we're on this phone interview, you feel free to stop me at any time, because talking is something that I can definitely do for a long time. So you definitely,
okay.
I do not mind one moment that you stop me if necessary.
All right. Well, Mark, I think we have a caller on the line, and I don't know, the switchboard is acting funny. I can't tell what's what. So I don't know what's going on, but I'm just gonna wing it. And but we do have someone on the switchboard, a caller. So Mark, ask your question, please, and then we're gonna get to this caller.
Okay. So Darlene, in your book, you talk about being verbally abused by your husband with such comments like, "I'm married beneath me." And having to struggle with the pain of lies and deceit that you just talked about with drug addiction. What were the drugs involved, Darlene? And was there also physical abuse in the marriage?
Yeah, so the verbal abuse was really throughout the marriage. When I was able to sit back and look back at how he would talk to me. And that, you know, I didn't recognize the verbal abuse when the verbal abuse was happening. But, of course, we recognize physical abuse. And so in 2003, when everything just blew completely up in the fall of 2003, we got into this big argument. And, you know, this is when I actually left and never came back at that point. So when we got into this argument, arguing back and forth, I'm standing over him, and he kicked me. And that's when he said, "I'm married to me." And it was like, I needed for that to happen, for the scales to be peeled off my eyes. Because, of course, we recognize physical abuse when someone physically does something to us. That's going to make us wake up, you know. And sometimes we don't recognize that physical abuse. Like when I had time to sit back and happen, all the things that have been said and done over the years, and the emotional abuse from just this constant back and forth. So that's when I recognized the abuse. But the at that point is when I found out. At that point, when I was crack and marijuana and drinking, and this was all towards the end. That pretty much he had picked up all the things. Because we had all been there before, like at all, like the people we ran with when we were teenagers and our teens and early 20s. You know, I'm not sitting back as some, well, I'm so good, I've never done anything. I've done a whole bunch of things that I'm not proud of, but I thank God for the experience so that I can help other young people who are doing good. But we were beyond that. You know what I mean? We were at an age and at a place in our lives that that was over, that was the past. And it really kind of shocked me because the thing is, when he started getting so skinny, he was in here and skinny, I knew he was not taking his HIV meds. And he didn't take them because he was in denial. He was in denial that he even had HIV. He didn't want nobody to know. I knew he wasn't taking his pills because at that time, Morvir was one of the meds that had to be refrigerated. So some of the pills had to go in the refrigerator. So I know you're not keeping near yours because you're not getting any refill. You know what I mean? I'm getting refill after refill every single month, and yours is still sitting there. So that's how I know he wasn't taking it. And so when he was getting so skinny, I kept seeing, because he was noticing, he stopped seeing our doctor. He saw the same infectious disease doctor, and he stopped seeing us. Every time I would go, he would say, "Where's George? Where's George?" And I was like, "I'm trying to get him to come. He won't come." And I'm telling him what's happening to him, that he's getting thinner and thinner and thinner. And I'm thinking that it was the HIV when he was losing all the weight.
Wow.
So either someone.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, me being someone who had been on crack before in my life, you would think I would have recognized it. I didn't. I missed it. I totally missed it. I did not know.
You there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you guys still hear me?
Oh. Okay, now yep, I can.
No, I was just saying, saying that I missed it. I missed that clue.
Right.
Oh, you missed it.
It was in front of you, but you didn't see it, right?
I didn't. I did not see that at all. I was surprised. I was really surprised because I just didn't really feel like he was at a point in his life that he would succumb to something like that. I mean, that's going back. You know,
okay.
Not to go back, but to go back that far to where we were, like in young adults, it was just surprising.
So the woman that infected him was a member of the church. Is that correct?
No.
In Delaware? No.
No. When we got to Delaware, is when he became a pastor. He started a church in Delaware. He started cheating with women out there, but he didn't tell them that he was HIV positive. They didn't know. He wouldn't tell the people that he cheated with. He never told them that he was HIV positive.
Oh, okay.
He was cheating with women years ago and so on. So he had to contract it sometime in the 80s, but at that time, back in the 80s, he slept with a lot of prostitutes. He stayed at the strip club and at the what are those places? that you go to, you put a quarter in the machine. Probably
peep shows. They're called peep shows. Yeah.
Right. So that was like one of his favorite spots. So he used to go to all those. Just all kinds of things here in Philly, Center City. Well, they're trying to redo Center City. There's a lot of gentrification going on in Center City. So it might not build, those places might not still be there. I'm sure it's still so. those were like his spots, his hangout spots. So I'm
all right. Well,
recently being the prosecutor, contracted. He's been set up.
Wow.
Oh. Well, Darlene, it seems like you had quite a life. I mean, I can see why you put this into a book form. I mean, you know, this guy that that supposedly loved you and, you know, infected you with HIV, and you know, sounds like a soap opera. My heart goes out to you. Now, is this guy still alive, or did he die from this HIV?
Yeah, he did. He died
in 2010. Excuse me, I didn't get that. He died when?
I said he died of AIDS in 2010.
Oh, okay.
2010.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, well, you know, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, you know, or anything, but it sounds like to me that, you know, they say that, you know, karma's a bitch. So I don't, not to disrespect the guy, I don't know him, but do you get why I say that? I mean, do you believe in karma, Darlene?
I do get why you say that. I totally believe in karma. And I've always said to, you know, people that know us and people that know him that I believe that if he had not been in denial and been in this place of never taking his medicine because he don't want people to see his medicine bottle, so he hides the bottles and no one can see it, so they won't know, and then hiding the bottles and you don't take your medicine, I believe that he could have lived. I think if he had lived differently, I think if he had lived a life of at least some type of remorse. He didn't seem remorseful at all about what happened. The times that we had conversations about it, he would say things like, well, somebody gave it to me. That's no way to respond. That's no reason to then purposely give it to another individual. Even the time that When he got within the relationship with the little boy, he had me babysitting his mother, and when we had the big, you know, argument about that, I said to him, "Why?" I said, "She has a child. Why would you not tell her that you have HIV?" And his response to me was, "She used to be a prostitute. She probably already has it." But wait a minute. So now here, is that enough that you're cheating, but you're also my husband? So you're sleeping with someone that you know was at some point a prostitute, but you didn't care about sleeping with her and then sleeping with me. You understand what I'm saying? It was so infuriating for me because I'm like, how are you processing this stuff in your head? I used to say that. How are you not seeing this? It's like, are you like so blind that you can't even see the things that you say and do? He used to say, he has said some of the things. When I think back on some of the things that he said and the excuses, oh my goodness, the excuses that he would make for why he did the things he did. When at this point now he's our pastor, we're getting back into a big argument about the cheating. And I'm saying to him, it's bad enough that you cheated in your relationship. I said, but now you're our pastor. You're being held to a higher standard. How is it that you can still have this mindset of just mindlessly cheating and not telling your people that you're HIV positive? And he actually said to me, well, Martin Luther King used to cheat. And I said, what?
Oh, really?
And I'm like,
wow.
Did you really just say that? And I said, so now you're comparing yourself to Martin Luther King. Like, you think you're equal with Martin Luther King. You know, I'm like, we're not talking about whatever Martin Luther King did. We're talking about you and what you did and what
right.
you're doing. And there's no justification for it. I don't care whoever did what before. There is no justification for this kind of behavior. And So back to your original question, do I believe in karma? Yes, I do. I do. I totally believe that you're going to reap what you sow in this lifetime.
You're going to reap what you sow. Well, Darlene, before we go into a break, we have this caller that's been on the line for quite some time. And it's an area code of it's the area code of 207. So caller, you are on the line. What's your name and where are you from? Hello, caller. Hello.
Did they give up and go?
I think they got I think we lost him. All right. So, okay, Darlene, are you still on the line?
I'm still here. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they'll call back and tell them that Ms. Darlene will stop talking long enough for them to ask a question.
They called for something. I just don't know what happened to them. All right, well, we'll be right back after this break, everybody. So everybody stay on the line, and we will be right back after this commercial and a song.
Okay.
Controversial, real, unparalleled. Author Terry E. Lyle has written an autobiography entitled Broken. Terry talks about overcoming her personal battle with suicide, being homeless, selling and using drugs, and living the life of a swinger. She found that with prayer and her belief in God is real, that she was blessed to overcome all adversity to becoming the woman and authoress she is today. The book is $20 and can be purchased through Amazon, Kindle, CreateSpace.com, and from her own personal website at www.terrylyle.com. It's yours today. And make sure you tune in to hear Terry on Unmasked each and every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time on blogtalkradio.com. The number 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. And remember, through God's grace and mercy, all things are possible, for He would not leave you.
Special, each and every day, you got to treat her right. about to make that woman feel it. She means the whole world to you. Listen, same thing it took to get that woman hooked. Gonna take the same thing to keep her, yeah. Now you can't keep going through the motions like she's not there. Gotta make that woman feel that you really, 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 really care.
Feel right,
feel right. Yeah.
Make her feel special.
Oh, you gotta
treat her right.
Treat her right, yeah.
Make her feel special.
And in the afternoon too. And when she gets tired of that, ask her what else that she wants you to do. Do, 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 do.
This is Chris Michael Ward. I am guest hosting for Terry. Terry is on vacation this week. She will be back next week. I want to apologize again for everybody I offended when I didn't give the call-in number earlier, but I will give it again, even though we got about 52 minutes left in the show, so you got plenty of time to call in. So if you have a question for Darlene King, and her story has been fascinating, I will say, you can call in. The number is 347-945-6003. Press the one key, and I'm going to put everybody back on the line. My co-host, Mark Anthony Riel, and the guest of honor, Darlene King. All right, everybody, we're back. Darlene, where can people find your book? Amazon?
Yes, so the book is available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. So pretty much any place that you can get books, you can purchase a book. Now, your local bookstores would most likely have to order it. So once you give them the ISBN number, they would be able to order the book and have it for you at your local store. But you can get the book everywhere. And it comes in both formats, a printed copy or an e-book format.
Oh,
where you can download it to like a Kindle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to a Kindle or a tablet.
Yeah, e-books, that's where they are. I mean, that's where people are. And then lots of people also listen to audiobooks. Is your book available in audio?
It is not an audiobook. But one of the things I plan on doing is republishing my book with a couple additional chapters of what has happened since the book came out. The book came out in 2012. And I've been wanting to republish it with a new title because most people read the title and they think it's going to be a man-bashing book or a preacher-bashing book, which it is not. It really is my story and my testimony of God coming in and what God can do in the midst of what you might think is the worst thing that could happen to you, but how God came into our lives, my children's lives, and really just took such a negative and worked it together for our good. So it really is my story in this struggle and this journey of going from a place of just sadness and depression, which is what I went through when I found out in the 90s, and to get into this place of peace and this place of this joy. It really is, at this point in my life, 26 years later, because it's 26 years now, but almost 27, 26 plus, and God is just so amazing in what he has done in our lives in spite of it. And I tell people all the time, it for me, it has been a blessing because a lot of the things that I've been able to do and a lot of the people that I have met, wonderful people that I have met over the years, have been as a direct result of this happening to me. So a lot of the people that are in my life now would not be in my life if I had not been HIV positive, because they were in my life and I met them as a direct result of testing positive for HIV. So it's just amazing, you know, how God works everything together for our good. But in 91, no, I didn't see any, it, all the stuff I'm seeing in 2018.
Oh, no.
You could not have told me what happened in 91. In 91, it was just a dark period, very dark, very sad, very lonely period in my life.
Yes.
And then it was just so, it's been so sad even while I was in this relationship. It's like I'm married, but I still felt very alone, felt like I really couldn't talk about all the things that was happening to me. And one of the things that my husband would not allow me to do, I always, a lot of the agencies here in Philadelphia, they have like groups and different people that you can talk to that's going through the same thing that you're going through. And I really wanted to like talk to other women and join some of these groups. But he wouldn't allow me to. He wouldn't allow me to. He didn't want me to tell people I was HIV positive. He didn't want me to talk about it. I couldn't. When I wanted to join these groups, he didn't want me to join these groups. And I didn't join because if I had, it would have just been more another space for arguing and fighting over something. If I had just went and joined them anyway, you know, without him agreeing to allow me to join them. So it was really just a really sad and dark period for me.
Yeah, they say, you know, life is short, so they say when you're in a relationship like that where the, you know, the other person's abusive, whether it be a man or a woman, it's just not worth it. But with every relationship, and I've been in a relationship for 9.5 years, so with every relationship, you got to give and take, and you have to think, you know, to say, well, that you can't change the other person can't change you, so he is who he is, and you are who you are. But I think it's different when somebody has HIV and they don't want you to talk about it. But he probably didn't want you to talk about it because he felt guilty, right? The guy who gave it to you didn't want you to talk about it, right? Is that right?
No, he didn't want me to talk about it because we knew a lot of the same people. So talking about it would be telling other people that he has HIV. And that was another point of a big source of arguing for us is at our old church that we used to go to, he's not the pastor at this church, where we all went as a family, we had a prayer breakfast. And at this prayer breakfast, I don't even remember what the topic was. I just remember breaking down in this prayer breakfast and just crying. And I confessed to the women, it was all women in this prayer breakfast, and I confessed to the women that I was HIV positive. Well, you know, of course he found out, you know, that I told all the women at church that I was HIV positive. And he was livid. He argued and argued about me telling these women at church the rest of our relationship. I mean, we'll be in an argument years later about chicken or dinner or whatever I fix for dinner. Me fixing something that he didn't want for dinner. And in the middle of that argument, he'll say, and I can't believe you told the women at the prayer breakfast. So, I mean, that became a source of argument for like years to come. And it was mainly because you can't cheat with the women at church now because I told the women in church, so I basically messed up his pool of people that he could go to. So that was his reason for not wanting me to tell anyone, because if I told someone, then he can't approach that person later. So,
I'm sure it was. Good.
No, I'm sorry.
Like
go ahead. We were together a good 30-something years, like off and on, when you count from age 12 to when did I finally, about 40, I was 40-something when I, I had to be in my 50s when I left, because I'm 59 now. So, yeah, I guess I was in my 50s. So, it was a good 30-something, 40 years.
Oh, 37, 40 years. So what made you stay with him? I mean, it seems like, I'm not, like I said, I don't know the guy, and my questions are just based on what you shared, so I'm not trying to attack attack him in any way. But what made you stay with him so long if he was this abusive, according to you?
Yeah. And that's, and, you know, and like I said, I had to sit back and really analyze my life in hindsight. So you have to remember, too, we were with each other off and on from the time we were 12 until, you know, we were adults. So it was like a continuous period of us being together because I had got, you know, we broke up after high school. I got married, and he was with him. He didn't get married, but he was with his children's mother. And then we got back together with the 10-year high school reunion. So it was like off and on for years. But one of the reasons why I continued to come back, because I kept saying to myself, oh, he's going to see. Oh, he's going to see. He's going to, God's going to open his eyes, and he's going to see the destruction he's causing. He's going to see the effect that it has on the children. He's going to see that the effect that it has on the congregation. I kept saying for years, I kept saying, oh, he's going to see. He's going to see. But now that I look at it in hindsight, it wasn't meant for him to see. A lot of the things that I could see as where God was taking, which I thought at that time where he was taking us, it wasn't where he was taking us, it was where he was taking me. But I couldn't see beyond the us at that period in our lives. And so when I continued to come back, I really believe when we'd break up and I'd leave and then he'd wear me down and wear me down, I really believe, oh, he sees now. Oh, he sees it. He sees the positive of what God can do with the two of us together, working together in HIV ministry. He should see it now. But he never did see it. And it wasn't meant for him to see, because it wasn't something that was meant for him to do.
Well, you know, guys like that, guys abusive like that can't see it. Okay, Mark, I'm sorry. I'll let you ask your question. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just wanted, I got word from Terry that unless there's a lot of questions from callers that call in, she would like for you to end the show at the appropriate time, which is 8:30. So I just want to interject that. My question for you, Darlene, is tell us more about growing up with this man and the courtship process in the early days. I'm sure there were many good times, right?
Oh yeah, there was fun periods off and on throughout. I mean, we were in middle school, of course, we were just kids, so it was really anything, you know, life altering or changing. But by the time we got to high school, he used to be the quarterback on the football team. So high school was very exciting. But the thing is, we were back and forth with each other in high school. I wasn't with him the whole 4 years of high school. So he was somebody, you know, there's always somebody in your life that you end up breaking up with, but always end up finding, going back with at some point. That's kind of like how our relationship was when we were kids. Like we used to go together when we were 12, 13, when we used to be in middle school, and then we broke up, and then we end up going to the same high school, and I was dating somebody else, he was dating somebody else, but when we broke up, then me and him ended up back together, and then we ended up breaking up with him and then with somebody else. So it was just like in and out of my life, all my life. It was when we got to the 10-year high school reunion is when we actually started dating as adults, as a couple on a continuous, regular basis. That's when we had got back together. Now then, at that time, when we got back together to 10-year high school reunion, it was wonderful. We weren't married at that time, but we talked about getting married then. He was still doing these things, but I didn't know it. You know, so he hid it very well. But as far as the children, my children got along very well with his children, so we were always on some places because we had the children. So it was always trips. It was always places we were going to, wonderful things we were doing as a family together. And it was his sister who actually told me that he cheated. This night he had some girl spend the night, and he lived with his sister. And his sister told me the next day that he had this girl spend the night before. And then that's when, you know, it blew up and we ended up breaking up then. And then
so after this horrific event since 91, have you been celibate all this time or
since 2003?
Okay.
Yeah. So
how has that been for you? It must have been hard. It must be hard for you. No.
It's not hard at all. I tell people this all the time. First of all, I haven't had to argue. So we were together, back together from 91 to 2003. When I left for good and not come back, and had not come back, was in 2003. So since 2003, I have not had to argue with anybody since 2003. Wonderful peaceful time in my entire life. I never plan on arguing ever again for the rest of my life. And people always say, oh, darling, don't you want to date? Absolutely not. To me, dating would be disturbing the peace. I have no intentions of disturbing the peace. It's just been the most peaceful, relaxing, joyous time. And for me, like, people put a lot of emphasis on sex. I don't put a lot of emphasis on sex. For me, I feel like I had enough to last a lifetime. It ain't that big of a deal. You know, maybe it took me getting to 59 to feel like it's not that big of a deal, you know. And I know for some people it is a big deal, but for me it is not a big deal. I think that we give it more power than it deserves. And I know that my feelings of this being this feeling this way is because of the relationship that I was in, having a husband that had us lose everything we have because of sex. So when I look at it, I do look at it differently as other people, because I constantly said to him and say to myself, is sex worth losing your house, your car, your job, your pension, your life insurance, your 401k, your kids, thing you had, your savings? If there is not sex in the world that I'm going to give up all that for. And for me, you gave up every single thing we had for sex. It's there's no sex in the world that's worth deserving of all that. So for me, all that power that he gave it, for me, it's like, oh no, you won't have no power over me in that area. So that's why I look at sex totally different, I think, from a lot of people. And when it comes to relationships, in my opinion, this is just me personally, I know other people feel totally different, but for me, relationships are, it's better to me to focus on the romantic side of a relationship, going out, going on dates, just cuddling together in one blanket, watching a movie, you know, flowers, roses, candy. To me, that's better than the sex. Now, that's just me. I know other people feel different, but it's like, I'm at an age where I have no compromise left in me. I don't compromise so much in that relationship that there's no compromise left. I want to be it all to myself. This is another thing, you know, people think I'm crazy when I say this. I always, my entire life, I either had a boyfriend or a husband, my entire life. Up until 2003. So all my life, I had to share a bedroom. Like, either it was a boyfriend or it was a husband. So we always shared a room. I have a room to myself. I have a closet to myself. I am never sharing a bed or room, a bed, a bedroom, or a closet with anybody again as long as I live. I'm sitting there to wait till I get to be 50-something to enjoy having a bed and a closet all to myself. I always had to get his half of the closet and my half of the closet and his drawers and my drawers and his side of the bed and my side of the bed. No, this whole bed is mine. All those drawers are mine. And the entire closet and the shelves are mine. I'm not sharing. I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right. All right, yeah, darling. Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Let me stop talking, because those people find out just how crazy I really am.
Well, Darlene, I guess we have 5 minutes left. It says on the switchboard 90 minutes, but I don't know, something happened. And to all the callers that I didn't get to, I tried to get to one and they hung up. So I apologize to any of the callers who try to call in. And What else did Terry say, Mark? Did I cover it?
She had told me this before. No, she had told me this before to make sure that you end at the appropriate time and hour. So unless there were a lot of questions, you know, from callers coming, you know.
Okay, well, there's a lot of questions from callers, and it does say 90 minutes on the thing. So, Darlene, I hate to cut it short, but I guess that's what I have to do. So it's like 5 till, it's about 5 till 8:30. Where can people find you, Darlene? What's your Twitter and Facebook handle?
Okay, so on Twitter and Facebook, it's at DarleneKing13. If you search on Facebook, DarleneKing13, I'll pop right up. And, of course, on Twitter, I'm at DarleneKing13. Like we already said, the book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble in both formats, printed format or e-format. And you can email me. My email address is DarleneKing13@hotmail.com. So if you want to reach out to me, via email DarleneKing13@hotmail.com. And, of course, inbox me on Facebook, direct message me on Twitter. And I just want to say to each of you, one, I want to apologize to you, Mark, because I tagged the wrong person on Twitter.
I apologize to you, Mark, for that. How can you not miss the glorious Diana Ross?
I know. Once I went back and saw that it was no picture of Diana Ross, that was the first thing in my mind. Like, I should have known it would have been a picture of Diana Ross. And so I apologize to you, but I also apologize to the other Mark Anthony Real, who I did tag because
Is there really another Mark Anthony Real? Oh, wow.
Yes, there's another Mark Anthony Real on Twitter. So to him, I apologize that you're being tagged, that you're being retweeted by my Twitter friends. I follow an active book of authors on Twitter, so they retweet a lot. So I apologize to him, and I want to thank you. Thank you, and thank you, Terry, for inviting me to the show once again. I truly appreciate it.
Darlene, I forgive you, and I love you, and we're all Facebook friends already, so we will stay in touch, and I am going to buy that book. I want to read it.
Oh, wonderful.
I'll stay in touch with you too, Darlene. Sorry that the time ran out. I got the wrong information, and to you, Mark, I'm sorry I didn't give you enough time to ask questions. I had so much in my mind, so I apologize to not give you enough questions or time to ask you a question.
Thank you for having me, guys. I truly enjoyed it.
And good luck on your gospel explosion show that's coming up. I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah, we have a young guy, Kevin Stewart Jr. from Detroit, is a gospel artist, and he's coming to worship with us in Delaware next weekend. It's going to be exciting.
It sounds like a great, great show.
Yeah.
So keep us posted.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mark.
I just asked her to keep us posted about how the show turned out. I'll be checking.
Oh, I sure will. I'll be posting about it.
And pictures.
All right.
Yes.
All right. We got one minute, guys. Any last words, Mark? Mark Anthony Real? Any last words?
Oh, no. I'm so happy that Darlene, you know, was courageous enough to share her testimony. And I hope that everybody learns from her experience and trust in God. Ultimately,
yeah,
like I do now.
And get tested. All of us want to definitely get tested for HIV.
Get tested
and use condoms.
Amen.
Thank you, Darlene, for coming on. Thank you, Mark Anthony, for being my co-host. And we'll see you next week with Terry. Everybody, bye bye.
Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye.